20 minutes to 12 on ABC. Kimberly, John Ford, coming to you. You manage community relations at Buru now. You're retired from politics. Do you expect a softening in the stance of Nyambaburu Yaru's stated opposition to fracking in its country now that Buru's Aboriginal Liaison Officer Neil McKenzie is the new chairman of the MBY board?
Well, no, I don't. Neil has his people's interests at heart, and we would never put him in a position where he would be put in a conflict of interest. And in fact, in regards to any negotiations with us, he steps aside on those matters. I'd like to touch on Anne Paulina's comments, because I actually agree wholeheartedly with her. There are limitations within the Native Title Act that I, like a lot of people, would like to see changed. However, Buru's view is that it's essential for people to have informed prior consent. And to that extent, we've funded and are funding the stakeholder groups for the TO organisations, for the named applicants, their own independent scientific panels. So we're paying, they've picked the people, they're getting their own independent scientific experts to look and test everything that we're saying. Now, we do the same, because everybody knows when you're working on a car and sometimes you can't get it to work, and you get a mate to come around, they just go straight to the problem. So when you're concentrating on something hard, you miss things. So it's very important to have that independent advice. And we don't expect that Yaru or Ningunamungunu or Garajari, Noongar, those people should believe just what we say. So this has been going on for a long time and will continue to go on in the consultation period. And I'd just like to make the point that these tests are part of that process. And getting the right baseline, we're involving traditional owners into the baseline monitoring. We've employed some trainees that we hope will become independent water quality monitoring experts. So I wholeheartedly agree with the proposition Anne was saying.
Hilary, another question for the panel from the audience, please.
Thanks, Vanessa. This one's come through by phone from Derby. Peter asks, how can Buru and the Department of Mines say there's no risk of contamination when we've all seen pictures of water so gassy it can be ignited with a flame?
We'd never say there's no risk. That's a silly proposition in life generally. So there's always risk, and risk has to be managed. I think in terms of methane bubbling up out of water reservoirs, for instance, in gaslands and things, a lot of that is biogenic. It's naturally occurring. In the shale gas systems... Well, it has been disproven and debunked, and we can provide the information on that. But in our own program, I mean, we've got a very detailed baseline monitoring program. We'll actually have loggers out at our well pads that are in the water bores monitoring gas on a continuous basis. We do this in landfills all the time to measure methane and things like that. And just touching on a previous issue that has been raised, I mean, the Department of Health and the Department of Water, we went and saw them after their submissions. We're a bit concerned that they seem to have, you know, not necessarily got the story straight. A lot of their information is actually quite old, and they have not been engaged with us in terms of what we're actually proposing. So we took all of our chemical risk assessment to the Department of Health. We've given them our baseline monitoring program in terms of water and groundwater and our air emissions, and we've said to them, please provide comment and guidance and input to this process. We're all in this process in terms of testing. We want to be using best practice. If you have any information or assistance or comments in terms of this risk assessment, please do this. The same with the Water Corporation.
Martin Pritchard, Buru's just one company. It assures us it's transparent and doing best practice, but it's just one company of many worldwide that have an interest in the canning. What safeguards do you think need to be in place if an industry is to go ahead?
Well, there's a number of different things that would have to occur. And I guess one of the things that people should realise is that, Buru is in charge of this project at the moment. It's really Mitsubishi and the multinational oil and gas companies that have the long-term interests in the Canning Basin. New Standard Energy is another player there, and behind them is ConocoPhillips, a massive multinational oil and gas company based in the States. You've also got PetroChina. So while small West Australian companies are getting the approvals down the track, perhaps what we could expect is multinational oil and gas companies taking over country to produce gas with all the attendant problems. Now, some of the things that we really need to get in place are, first of all, is a moratorium on fracking in Western Australia, particularly in the Canning Basin, so that we can do the research that is required, that government departments have identified that needs to be done into the risks of fracking, have a good understanding of the hydrology and the hydrogeology of our region, have a good understanding of the groundwater and the surface water, have a good understanding of what thousands of gas wells would mean for the Canning Basin between here and Balgo. Also, we need to make sure that companies, when they come here, they need a social license. Unless they engage properly and are willing to provide information in a transparent way. I did request information from Buru yesterday from their EPA referral, haven't had the response yet. Hopefully they can provide me with that report. We'll also be requesting the report that they've sent to the Department of Health, as well as the independent assessment that they've sent to UWA that has apparently been peer-reviewed. So we need transparency. We also need information from the Department of Health. And, you know, if we're going to have some kind of proper way of making a decision, and the community needs to make a decision, not multinational oil and gas companies like Mitsubishi or ConocoPhillips. The community needs to be able to decide on whether this is a good thing for the Kimberley or a bad thing.
Peter Stone in Queensland, you've seen all this unfold before because the coal seam gas industry is much further developed. What does Western Australia need to be wary of and consider before it develops gas fields in the Canning?
Yeah, a number of the things have been mentioned by my fellow panellists. One is involving the community in development plans. Obviously the community have interests. They also have knowledge about the local area that can materially assist government and industry in formulating development plans. The other things that have come through from Queensland are thinking about what happens after gas development. So, you know, ensuring that there's effective regulation for abandonment of wells, and that there's long-term monitoring put in place to, you know, determine what's happening with wells after they've been abandoned. And some of it relates to I mentioned earlier, you know, the Australian Council of Learned Academies has reviewed the scientific information surrounding shale gas development and found that the evidence suggested that the risks weren't sufficient in either frequency or severity to warrant saying that development shouldn't occur, but they said that we should learn from what's occurred elsewhere and seek to understand how that information will play out in our particular local environments.
You touch on a point there about the local environment and wet season extremes, floods, rain in the dry season, even best planning can't stop the rain. The Water Department says that surface activities of fracturing operations pose the greater risk. Damien Ogburn, Uluru's on the edge of Roebuck and Fitzroy floodplains. Do you acknowledge that there's a risk?
Again, I would never say there's no risk. In terms of containment on site, all of our water reservoirs, as I said, are triple lined and designed to be able to withstand a two times a 1 in 100 year flood event. So, I mean, they cannot flood. Rupture of them cannot go off site because they're below ground level and things like that. We will monitor that as well in terms of the risk assessment and things like that. Just touching again on what John Ford was saying earlier, I mean, it's important also to understand that we have got six universities from those three different peer review groups that are running independently of Buru's own peer review group panel run by the traditional owners out at Nookumbar and with the Yaru people and things like that. So there's a very heavy scrutiny of what we've put up in terms of the 800 pages of risk assessment that have gone to the Department of Mines and Petroleum. That includes the environment plan and the 9 appendices that sit behind it.
Hilary, more questions from the for the panel from the audience, please.
Thanks, Minister. One from Dale for Buru Energy.
Well, you've just raised the risk management processes that you're talking about for your reservoirs, but how are you actually going to prevent from them from overflowing? The amount of rain we've had in the last few days, if there's cyclone events, how do you actually prevent that water from escaping? And if it does, what are you going to do? How do you fix the problem that that then creates?
Well, first of all, from our analysis of the water that's come back in Yallaroo 2, we don't believe that there's water in there that's going to be of great concern. I mean, there's elevated minerals, particularly salt, so it's about 6 times the salinity of seawater, ducks swim in it. But in terms of the flooding, well, I mean, you get 600 mils of rain here. We have 1.5 metres at least of freeboard on these reservoirs, and they sit above the floodplain, so they cannot flood. I mean, this is an engineering problem.
Another question
for the panel.
If
it did flood, it would be Noah's Ark for all of us.
Hilary?
We've got a question from the audience saying there's lots of talk about how it will be strongly regulated, but recently the WA Ombudsman documented very poor environment management of mining projects in WA. How can you expect us to trust their self-regulation system?
Phil Gorey, perhaps for you from the Mines Department should answer that.
Yeah, happy to. Look, back a number of years ago, the Auditor General in this case actually did a review of the mining legislation, which is actually different to the petroleum legislation. What that pointed to was in regards to the extent to which a risk-based regulatory approach is applied, rather than a prescriptive approach, is applied to the mineral sector. Is essentially what that was about. There's been a range of things that have been done by the state government since then, including with the petroleum legislation, although the petroleum legislation actually already had a risk-based system in place. So one of the things that I think people and listeners might be interested in is there's a continuous process that government goes through to look at its regulatory system, look at the laws that it has in place, how effective they are. With the petroleum legislation, there's special rules brought in now nearly 2 years ago, which look particularly at all petroleum gas developments. And while you know that's legislation, most people don't want to trawl through that sort of stuff. The reason in Western Australia we have the ability to look at the chemicals used for petroleum and geothermal activities is because that's what's specified in our laws.
Leaking wells, migrating fluids, human error, it can happen, can't it?
Oh, certainly. The regulatory system that you have has to have in place contingency arrangements, which Western Australian regulatory system has. So it has a very strong approval system, so you can't actually do essentially almost anything in regards to petroleum and geothermal without approval. That approval needs to assess the environmental impacts and talk about monitoring. It needs to include contingency plans, so what happens when you know those small chance events do happen. And then to close sites out, to close wells out, to rehabilitate, that needs special approval as well. If all those things don't work, if the operator still doesn't comply, there's actually penalties and there's actually insurance that the operator must maintain so that the government can actually move in there and fix any problems that happen as well.
Time is fast approaching to the end of this hour. It's been very interesting. I'll conclude with a yes or no question from each of you. And I'll start, Peter Stone, from the CSIRO and our Brisbane ABC studio with you. Yes or no, is fracking in the Canning Basin safe?
A scientist will say it poses a low risk.
And Paulina, on the telephone, is fracking in the Canning Basin safe?
I would say that fracking in the Canning Basin needs to be contained within a statutory water plan so that we can look at all of these issues.
Damien Ogburn, do you believe it is?
The way we're proposing it, yes.
Martin Pritchard from Environs Kimberley, what do you think?
From the evidence from all around the world, no one can say that fracking is safe in the Canning Basin at this point in time.
And for you, Phil Gorey from Department of Mines and Energy?
We wouldn't approve proposals if we didn't think that they addressed all the environmental and health issues.
We have just time for one last audience question. Hilary, if you can give us an email question,
Vanessa,
from the audience.
We do have an email question. I'll just get it to you now. It's from a former Broome resident, Fran. She writes, my question is to Dr. Anne Polina. She says, based on their 45,000 years of knowledge and stewardship, have the traditional custodians of the land identified a significant risk from fracking for local land, water, flora and fauna? And if so, can you outline what the biggest of those risks are?
And I'm sorry, you'll have to be brief, but if you can summarise.
What I'd say is that there are multiple issues that need to be considered, and all of this can be considered within a independent case study, particularly devoted to the Super Canning Basin.
That was brief indeed. Thank you, Anne Polina. And I'm just hoping that we can thank our panel now for appearing on ABC Kimberley today. We have had Buru Energy's Chief Scientist, Dr. Damien Ogburn, and Community Relations, John Ford, Martin Pritchard, the Director of Environs Kimberley, Dr. Phil Gorey, the Department of Mines and Energy, the Head of the Environment Department there, Dr. Anne Polina on the phone, an academic and Kimberley Aboriginal leader, and in our Brisbane ABC studio, the CSIRO's Dr. Peter Stone. Thank you to all of you for sharing just a small part of what is going to be a continuing conversation of the future of the Canning Basin in the Kimberley. A round of applause, please, from the audience. I'm sorry if we couldn't get to all your questions. I know that there'll be more opportunities for that to happen, but thank you, everybody, for coming along this morning. It's a packed house in the ABC studios here in Broome. Thank you to the panel who've provided their time this morning. I hope that wherever you are in the Kimberley, you've had some of your questions answered, that you've got a bit more of an insight into what is going on in the Super Canning Basin. That's going to be the next big resources area for Western Australia. I'm Vanessa Mills. Thank you for your company today, right here on ABC Kimberley.